So with that, welcome everybody. The topic we're going to talk about today is basically a topic that Rollin and I actually lived through as peers. It's about the best practices for engaging better with the product and corporate marketing groups. During all of our experience and all of our work with consulting, this obviously is a topic that comes up quite often. Typically, this comes up around, you know, hey, how do I make sure that the marketing organizations truly understand the partners? How do I make sure that, you know, as we're going through product launches or relaunches or renewals, how do we make sure that all the various organizations truly understand what's needed and required from the partner community? So here's what we found. Honestly, this is a two-sided coin here. So obviously there's some responsibilities on our side from the channel organization. Then there are also some expectations required from the product and the corporate marketing groups. So again, you know, I have Rollin. It's actually interesting. Rollin and I actually worked together, as you know, a long time ago at IBM, and we actually experienced this firsthand. So one of the first roles I had in the partner organization was to basically represent all the product teams. And Rollin and her peers on the sales and channel side essentially were our customers. So we had to actually go through this exact process, which is one of the things that we had developed from that experience was, you know, a set of expectations and a set of processes that helped us literally become more aligned. So I came at it from the product side, Rollin came at it from the channel and channel sales side. So she's going to be on primarily, you know, providing input and thoughts and color commentary. And for those of you, obviously, I'm Mark, and we're going to continue to go down this path. So the three things that I want to talk about. Number one is, you know, in the discussions, we often talk into the products and the marketing organizations is trying to get that understanding of the difference between what a partner has to go through in terms of their journey to be engaged with the product, understand the product, and be able to, you know, go to market with the product. And then the connection point is, okay, well, how does that actually connect to what the product groups typically talk about, which is the buyer's journey? So the typical buyer's journey that we all know about, how does that work? And basically, what are the things that you can do to make those connections? The next thing I want to talk about is what we refer to as a channel-ready checklist. And what I want to do is kind of go through and explain how we have used this both in our personal and actually in our work lives, as well as through a number of consulting engagements that we've done to basically lay out how do you get alignment between the organizations. And then the last part I want to talk about is, you know, basically helping get an understanding of how you can have better engagement with the overall marketing teams. We get this discussion a lot whenever we get the request for this discussion quite often because, you know, many times we don't have control over those groups. You know, some of us, you know, fit into the marketing organization. Some of us fit into the channel groups. There's definitely an organizational element of this, but the reality is, you know, what are some things that you can do to help you as you're continuing to, you know, foster those relationships across the board? So this is one of the best ways that I've ever heard this described was when, you know, working on a project, and I was interviewing a CEO of a very large partner that was literally working with one of the, basically a very large vendor. And here was his comment back to me. He says, look, the channel teams that I work with at this vendor are really world class. The issue was is that the rest of the organization had very little channel DNA. Let me give you an example. And he used these exact examples. When he would go to Microsoft and he would have discussions with the CFO, because he was a big partner, the CFO intrinsically understood all of the issues, rebates and what they meant to him and all those kind of things. Whereas when he went to the CFO of the vendor that he was talking about, essentially he had to educate that CFO on everything happening. So essentially what he was really kind of talking to me about is that the organizations that end up being the best at channel are not just because they have great channel teams, but because the channel teams have enabled or worked with and have close alignment with the rest of the organization. So some of you, this may sound real familiar and go, oh my gosh, this is exactly the problem we have. There are some of you that are going to look at this and go, wait a second, we already solved this, so that's great. And there's going to be others of you that realize that this is a place that, you know, maybe there's some improvement for the organization. You know, oftentimes when we look at our roles, right? If you look at our roles as channel professionals, now in addition to driving and running the channel, some of the things that we are required to do is obviously be that evangelist. So being able to go back and talk to our peers and the marketing organization around why the channel is important, what it means. There's also reciprocal. Honestly, a lot of times some of these organizations don't quite understand what we know, what they need, and what they need to deliver. So listening and providing feedback in terms of what's working and not working is actually something that's critical. And the last part of this is education, obviously being able to go back and educate the teams around what works and what doesn't work, et cetera. So that is just a little bit of background. Let me. I now want to talk about the concept of connecting the partner journey with the buyer's journey. So let me go back and talk about a project that we did, and this is combined with some of the input that we've had from other projects as well. But we basically did a survey and went back and asked. We first asked the channel teams. So we went back and asked them, tell us the perspective of your view of what's going on within the corporate and product teams. We then also went back and asked the corporate and product teams their perspective of what's going on within the interlocking with the channel. So the first off, let me give you the perspective from what the channel team thought in terms of what was being provided, what was being delivered, the things that were needed in order to go to market effectively. There's kind of some themes that we came through. The first was that most of the information and material that came forward from the product organizations, while accurate, actually lacked an effective business proposition for the partners. So what was happening is material coming forward was saying, this is what it is, but was missing the concept of, and this is why a partner would care. The second thing we got back was that many of the materials and content that was being produced and brought forward was generic in scope. In other words, here is your channel content, channel deliverables that you need for the channel, without truly understanding the fact that, well, what's needed for an MSP is very different than what's needed for a VAR, which is very much different than what's needed for an SI. So just getting that understanding and being able to provide context within the different kind of partner types. And one of the things I came back with, this was actually a project that we did to go help educate the teams, is that honestly the view from the channel groups is that there was very little comprehension of what the actual partners' go-to-market strategies were. In other words, they didn't quite understand exactly how their products or solutions fit into what a channel partner might be going to market with. So they might have a general idea, but in terms of actually being able to give specifics and details, that was an issue. The other thing that they felt was that there was obviously lack of guidance as it relates to kind of promoting awareness to the partners. So a good example of this was around launch time, right? So, well, when you get into this discussion of, well, when should I launch to the partners versus launch to the customers? So got a lot of discussion around, okay, well, what's the right time to do that? How do we keep things confidential while still being able to share information? So that was another issue. And then the last part of it was just the whole inconsistency, you know, understanding what the partners really need. And this came up in terms of MDF, you know, what marketing programs were coming out, the length of time required to do actually do it. So these were the common themes. And some of the feedback we got was, look, you know, while some of these are issues, some of these were actually great opportunities, right? So one of the group we were talking about, you know, by going through and really providing that education, getting detailed information, they were able to basically get interlocked in terms of what the partners really needed, and basically were able to kind of build the foundation of success going forward. I know many of you deal in the global world. So this is a common issue that we hear and come back with that comes back from the global teams is, look, you know, because of all of these themes and what we see that, you know, fundamentally from a geography perspective, oftentimes it's just easier to build stuff locally. And so just kind of, you know, get piecemeal whatever's needed and we'll basically build it ourselves. And the other issue that we saw pretty consistently was, you know, the problem with one of your roles, and we've talked about this in the Channel Masters in terms of enablement, is there's no one person to go to help you connect the threads across that. In other words, if you need, and we've actually worked with some of you on the phone with a relative to the MSP programs, is if you go to the team, the marketing or corporate or product teams and say, hey, we need stuff, materials, et cetera, for the MSPs, a lot of times you have to go to these various groups, and there's no one that you can typically go to in order to make that happen. So that was kind of the themes why we see this situation and why it needs to be addressed. So we also went back and asked the corporate and product teams, which honestly that's where I came from. So I looked at these and went, you know, when I was in those roles, I had the same situation. So number one is that most of the product groups, this is probably a little different between product and corporate marketing, most of the product groups will tell you that they typically have a better understanding of channels than they typically do, unless they're in an organization that's very channel-centric. Again, what's happening is, look, they fundamentally view their primary role is developing stuff, materials, content, assets, programs, for end users. And so a lot of times what's happening is they're building it for end users, and then the expectation is they will provide it to the channel organizations to tailor and edit based on the channel team's perspective. Sometimes that works, sometimes that doesn't work. The other feedback is that, hey, we don't need to know all the details around the various partner types. We heard that feedback a lot. I don't need to go into the details. I just need to have a basic understanding, and that's good enough. Which then, you know, flips back around and says, well, you know, they also have said that, look, we don't necessarily know exactly what the partner needs are. They don't have real good exposure, the feedback of, you know, what actually the partners are going to market with. And the other thing they came back and talked to us about is, look, we don't get a lot of feedback as to what's working, what's not working, what we need to change, adjust, et cetera. So going back and putting feedback loops in, you know, have been a tremendous help in many organizations in terms of helping with that. The feedback they get is like, look, we have, you know, we're doing a lot of work. If you talk to the products and the marketing groups, they are very busy. Their feedback is like, there's lots of content out there, but we don't necessarily know what's important or not from the partner's perspective. The general view is that, hey, look, most of the content we have out there is very, you know, it defines a solution, defines what the product does, it defines what the customers need. Therefore, this is typically information that should be or could be suitable for the channel. And then, you know, obviously they don't have a clear understanding of what's motivating partners in terms of the business value proposition, so they don't necessarily know exactly what it needs to be or what it should look like. So that's kind of the background of what we typically see. So the first part of this, then when we worked on this, is literally helping organizations try to fix and understand this whole concept around how do I connect the buyer's journey and the customer journey. So let's start off with the customer journey, or actually the partner journey. So let me start with what the customers look like. Typically, this is how corporate and product marketing teams think, right? So their view is, well, how do I create awareness, consideration, purchase, advocate, renewal, those kind of things, right? So that's the way they think about the go-to-market. So typically, their programs are based on, well, what do I need to do in each of these areas to drive success with my product lines or my solutions? But here's the difference, right? So we as channel professionals think about it very differently. We think about it in terms of the partner's journey. So we got to figure out, you know, how do we identify and recruit or enable the right partners? What do we need to do to go to market and co-sell with those partners? And then how do we continue to foster that loyalty as we continue to go forward? So the question is, and this is where I typically, we've seen the disconnect is, most of the thought and most of the process associated with the marketing teams focuses on the customer or buyer's journey, whereas most of our activities and what we do tends to focus on the partner journey. So the solution is, well, how do you connect the dots? And so typically you think about that in terms of the planning process. You know, as you're starting to figure out, well, how do you go to market? What's the strategy? How do you actually engage, et cetera, et cetera? The reality is that if, and this takes lots of work working with product groups, is that the buyer's journey actually should be the one that comes first. So if you think about it, if they're the ones that are actually the ones taking the product to market, they're the ones talking to customers, you know, the situation of them getting caught off guard, not knowing or understanding. You know, and this can, you know, really can happen as you start to go through, you know, what a partner's looking to go achieve. So if you think about it, if you're looking at, for instance, think of a launch date, and this can be, you know, a product, this can be an upgrade, this can be an update, this can be a renewal. Whatever is trying to actually be launched to the partners or to the customers, it should actually start with what you're doing in terms of the partner's journey. And then the connection point actually becomes, right, how do you then be able to incorporate the customer journey into that overall go-to-market model? So the organizations that we have seen that have been the most successful is have actually been able to go back and lay this out in terms of how they go to market, where they really do think about, well, how do I get the partners engaged? A lot of times we see this very connected to what's happening on the sales organizations. So, you know, they don't launch products to the customer. People don't launch, their vendors don't launch products to the customers without telling their sales force first. It's the same thing in terms of how you basically go to market with the product organizations as well.
Hey, Mark.
Yes.
So just a quick comment for everybody. If you take nothing else away from this, I would tell you this slide is probably what I would consider the best view. Like if you want to see how someone like Mark and I work together, if Mark was on the programs and the product side, and let's say back in the time that I was on the field sales channel side, you see the partner journey starting far ahead of the customer journey, but you see the product people, the R&D people in the blue on the very, very bottom, right? As they back their stuff up, I don't know about you, but I've worked in companies where they're marching along the strategy, engage, enable, market, sell, develop, and support, and they get to customer, or they've got beta customers, they get to the customer, and then after the customer, they're like, oh, right, what are we going to throw to the channel? So that green partner journey gets put out after the customer or concurrent with the customer. That's your situation. When Mark said, either you have an opportunity to address, or you don't have an opportunity to address. If you're already working with the brand people and the partner team is engaged in advance of the customer, you're in great shape. If the partner team is engaged at the same time as the customer, you might like to get it a little bit earlier. But if the partner team is engaged after the customer deliverable is available, right, that's when you have the most work. And worst case, you take the slide, you start writing in departments and names, and all of a sudden you see new sets of roles and responsibilities and timelines. So I'll just stop there. Mark's going to drill it down now into actual how you execute, but this is how you gauge where you are as a company. Thanks, Mark.
Yeah, this is great. And good commentary there in terms of, you know, this is different for everybody. And so, if, you know, if it's a how much time in advance, because we get that question a lot. Well, how far in advance should we be engaging the partner versus, you know, in preparation for launches? And the reality is it's very different. You know, there's some situations, honestly, where it's an extremely competitive environment, and you got to be careful with how much information you release. So the process by which you go about doing that might be different. At IBM, when we did this, you know, we would basically select a core set, and we would actually brief them, get them involved, get them going, include them in betas. And then we'd have a secondary launch, right? We have a secondary engagement with the next tier of partners. So we stratified that. Sometimes that was up to, you know, 90 days in advance. In some cases, when there were new products and they were really strategic, that could be up to 6 months. So it all depends. The point being is the framework with which you approach this and how you go back and work with the product groups and say, okay, can we get this aligned and make sure we're doing that? And if you're already doing it, great. If not, hopefully this gives you a mechanism with which you can go back and have some of those discussions with your partners, with the product groups. Because, you know, again, the thing that always worked with me when we would talk to the groups is you would never go back. You would never launch a product without teaching your salespeople about it first. It's the same thing with the partner. So using that as the analogy oftentimes worked pretty well.
This is Kristen from Hitachi Ventura. I have a question for you. So I love this slide because I've run into this before in the past, and I guess I was just curious, like, if you took this slide and tried to kind of sell it internally to product management or, you know, product marketing or, you know, different groups like that. So the blue is really the product management, kind of they're evolving the product, right? And then the gray is really kind of product marketing or more of a marketing piece, and then the partner piece is where the channel comes in, right?
Correct.
Got it. Okay.
So typically, here's what we found. Honestly, it's because if you look at most of the product groups, they're very process-oriented, very process-driven. They follow development plans and things like that. The key to me was getting into the engagement, which I'll actually use this as a case statement, getting into the engagement relative to the timing so that it was baked in from the very beginning, as opposed to getting into some of the you know, a lot of times the channel will get involved in the sales enablement part of this, which can come very close to the, would come very, you know, close to the end right near launch time. So going back and having the discussions, obviously at the senior level works best, where it's actually dictated and it's incorporated into the go-to-market model. That typically is what works best. And we've seen, we've actually made that change at IBM and it worked very well.
So, but you're absolutely right. You can write names into this. Your blue at the bottom, the royal blue, that's your R&D group, your brand management group, any of those groups that are actually interfacing with you. And then as you move up, Mark, would you feel like the customer journey, the buyer's journey, that's where your product marketing or corporate marketing or other people who are launching awareness, right? So you can actually get names onto this in terms of, hey, if you're here and I'm here, what does our timeline look like today and what do we really want it to look like tomorrow?
Okay. Does that answer your question?
Did we get everybody's questions?
Yep,
yeah.
Thank you.
Cool. You're welcome. All right, so that, you know, one is, you know, again, the engagement model, getting that engaged, getting, working with the products and the marketing groups in advance and getting it baked into the process. That's the best way to do this. The other thing that we found, so we had, and when I was doing this personally, right, we had literally 16 different product groups. So what was wrong, what was happening is every product group was sort of doing whatever they wanted to and basically coming forward with, you know, a set of materials that weren't necessarily exactly what everybody needed. So we actually built this, and we've implemented a number of consulting engagements as well, where we basically go through this concept of creating what we call a channel-ready checklist. And I'll talk a little bit about what that means and show you kind of what that looks like and tell you that, you know, it's very different by organization, very different by product type, and very different by partner type. But at the first part, let me kind of talk a little bit about why you should think about looking at a channel-ready checklist. So a couple things. Number one is that, you know, you start to think about the channels, and they should be treated just like any other sales channel is. In other words, what are the deliverables? You know, typically, the VP of sales and the VP of are the regional sales folks have pretty good feedback channels into, here's the things that I need you to give to me so that I'm ready to go to market. A lot of times, that we don't have the same don't always have the same feedback from the partner side, but that's number one. So basically, you know, treat them the same. You can treat them just like any other channel, and the timing is the same as well. The other one is have to go back and make sure that you know, partners must be ready at the time products are ready to go to market. So the concepts of things get launched, customers find out, customers ask questions to partners. The worst thing that can happen is for a customer to ask a partner a question about a solution that you don't know, that they don't know about. And it's not because they haven't looked at it, but because the information is available to them. Typically, we find that, you know, so the best-in-class channel organizations really do take the lead to drive the channel-first activity. So they literally think about this and, hey, I have to get my partners up to speed. This is how I'm going to do it, and I'm going to make sure I have the right set of information. And I think this becomes really incumbent on us as a channel organization is because that a lot of times the product organizations don't necessarily know exactly what's needed by the channels. So they, you know, you go back and talk to them and say, hey, we need materials, and they come back with a generic answer. We have tons of things available, right? And that's, you know, it's up to them to figure out what they need. The reality is it's better off if we come to them and talk about, well, here are the things that our channels need and why and when. The other thing, what it does, it helps eliminate some of this issues around, well, one product has one set of things, another product has a different set of things, the concept, and then with each launch, sometimes it changes. Well, now we're going to do this versus that. Being able to actually define that and have a specific list that says, here are the things that must be in place in order for the channel to be ready, and it's repeatable. So it gives you a way to kind of be consistent and go forward. So what do I actually mean by channel-ready checklist? There's a couple things that we talk about with it. Number one, it basically defines what are the key activities that are required to essentially take a product to market. And I'm going to talk a little bit about, you know, kind of a traditional model as well as some of the things that are changing in the as-a-service or cloud-based models because it's a little bit different. The key is not necessarily just to have the whole list of things that you got to go do, but the most important part is that there's a commitment level to that. Right, so there's a commitment level that says these are the types of things I need when, if you're going to build out your corporate or your partner strategy, there's certain information you need, just like when we went through the simulation. There were certain things that we, you know, that we laid out and said, you've got to have this information in order for you to be able to do your jobs. Well, the reality is a lot of times the channel group or the product groups and corporate groups don't necessarily know exactly what that is. So being able to go back to them and say, hey, I need the customer value pitch, or I need kind of the economics associated with the solution. I need those 60 days, 90 days, 120 days in advance of going to market, because I then have to take that information and turn it into a partner business value proposition so I can go approach the partners to get them ready on time. So just getting that all laid out, not just, you know, listing, but also commitment from what's needed from each of the groups. The other thing is I really, by doing this, it allows you to go back and really establish, you know, kind of what the timing requirements are for these deliverables. So just knowing that I need a partner value customer value pitch, or the economics associated with it, or the target markets, knowing that I need that the day before doesn't help. Knowing that I need it 3 months in advance so we can get our work done, that's absolutely important. So that's what we mean by it. Let me show you. Here's an example. We do actually have, you know, other examples that we can show you as well, but here's just an example of one that we used before. And we don't try and capture everything because obviously there's tons of details, but just kind of lays out, well, do we actually need from the product? What is it going to take us to get ready from the product side and the marketing side? You know, it can be everything from what's the key messaging, what are the key routes to market, how do we get our, you know, channel partners, you know, involved in the beta programs and things like that. Obviously, you know, making sure that we have the pricing and packaging and all the things in place, you know. And you can, this may be different for every single one of your companies. The idea, though, is to try and lay this out in terms of what you think is needed. You know, obviously the partner enablement side, typically we do a pretty good job of this because typically, you know, these are things that are in place that people already know about, so we have those typically done well. And then obviously the support side, the professional services side is probably something that we see lacking in many of the organizations. So maybe we have, hey, here's the technical training in place, but do we really have the ability to drive the professional services and then we put stuff in place to actually train those organizations? So this is just an example. Obviously, this is a sample from a company that's been doing it a while. So this is something that you could use, but honestly, the point of this is not necessarily just to give you the list of all the things needed, because it varies. What it does is attempt to help you figure out a way that you can go engage in this discussion with the product groups to make sure you have covered what you need. Before I move on, any questions on that? Does that make sense?
Mark, I'd make also one comment for everybody. If you look under where it says channel readiness activities, the first block, product strategic marketing readiness, you guys should recognize some of those tasks from your simulation kickoff. When we kicked it off and you all went through the navigator and said, who is the target marketing? Which route to market are we using? What is the ideal partner profile? Have we built a value proposition? Those are all things you all have been through. So just to kind of connect the dots there. Thanks, Mark.
Great. Good point. So one thing that we've also started to engage with a number of companies about is that, look, there's a whole different set of considerations that go on if you're talking about cloud or SaaS-based products. We had an individual just joined our team a couple months ago that basically came from a number of SaaS companies. We've kind of helped pick his brain in terms of some of the things that you have to consider as you're thinking about cloud or SaaS-based considerations. And we just kind of wrote down some of the key ones, some of the top ones. Obviously, there's a lot more. But let me just kind of go through a couple of these. You know, the first one is around this whole concept, you know, as you're building, as most of you are building and going to market with your cloud or SaaS offerings, one of the critical components of that is that there's not this concept of I sell to somebody and then somebody passes the paper on to somebody else. The concept is it's one integrated account model. So renewals, the information about the company, when things are due, how many users, all of that is not separated anymore, but typically is in one customer account that everybody has access to. The other thing, obviously, you start to get into this whole consideration around pricing and billing and how does all that work. Most of you are not responsible for that. But what we're finding is that a number of the product groups, because they may not have been doing this very long, they may have an understanding of what pricing and billing models they need in place for the direct side. What we're finding is that not all of them have a clear understanding of what that means as it relates to the partner side. Anybody that's currently doing SaaS has an understanding of the concept of partner of record. So who is actually owns that account, whether it be from an ongoing basis or a solution or product basis, but having that understanding of how that works, is all that in place? So if the partner sells it, you know, how did they become partner of record, how do they get paid, et cetera? Obviously, because renewals, upsells, all those kinds of things are absolutely critical in most SaaS, you know, or pay-as-you-go models, really having a very clear understanding of how that's going to work between any kind of internal renewal teams versus external partner renewal teams, things like that, so just making sure that's in place. We're also seeing this whole emergence of the concept of customer success teams. Salesforce has actually made this very popular in terms of, you know, again, the role is not necessarily to sell. The role is not necessarily to renew. Their role is to get people to adopt successfully the solutions that they've already purchased. And then, obviously, there's obviously a selling component. There's obviously a renewal component. But the whole focus is to get people to use and understand, and the more they use and understand, the more that they will basically take advantage of what's available to them. So just having an understanding of how that works, we've talked about this in class, right? So, you know, Cisco's done a good job of this, where they actually have these, you know, customer lifecycle manager roles, so they're actually teaching people how to do this. Microsoft has some of that. They also have a model where you can actually tap into the Microsoft customer success folks to help you with help partners with that. So, again, maybe not something that you're going to solve per se, but making sure you understand how it's going to work, because that's such a critical part of the model. The other thing, obviously, that changes quite a bit is the whole concept around lead gen and trials. You know, if you look at most of the SaaS offerings, there's some kind of way to get started. There's some kind of way to go on and, you know, get a user account or things like that. You know, and obviously the product teams are very good at putting that together and making it work. The question again comes in, well, how do partners play in that? So if I'm a customer and I'm an engineer and I go to the site and I download and I create one account and I'm doing the evaluation and then I decide that I want to do that, well, how does that work in terms of your deal registration or who actually is the partner work with them? So all those kinds of things. And then the other, obviously, is the cloud marketplace integration. So we've had some discussions, and we had some discussions in class, and some of you folks are actually participating in this, is, well, how is that whole, how does the integration with the AWSs and the Azures and folks like that, the IBMs of the world, how does that actually work? And to give you an example, I think we talked about this in the class as well. So, like, for instance, Sophos has recognized that in an Amazon instance, if you want to purchase security, you can purchase that, right, just literally through the marketplace. But they've also recognized and realized that the partner of record actually applies in that model as well. So they actually will give partners credit for, if they have the partner of record, for the solution that's purchased through the cloud marketplaces to support those environments. So that actually they actually get credit in their partner program for doing those kind of things. So just going through and figuring that out and say, okay, do we have those things in place? A lot of this is things that some of it is things the product organization, or excuse me, the channel organization can do. But a lot of times it comes down to the channel organization going and engaging and working with the product teams to make sure all of that is in place, quote unquote, channel ready, in order for that to work in the SaaS and cloud-based models. So before I move on, does that make sense? Questions on that? Excellent. A couple of case study examples of where we've seen this work. Obviously, at IBM, both when we were there as well as in recent times, this was basically used to really help establish clear expectations across product groups. So what happened is this became a formalized process. So as part of the overall product development delivery process, channel aspects and channel content was considered just in the same relative importance as everything else. It was just part of the process. It was part of the things that needed to get done. And one of the things, I think probably the most important part of this, was the commitment from the executive team that says, look, if this stuff isn't ready, we're not launching. Just like when a product goes out the door, if things aren't ready, there's ability for groups to stop the process. There was executive commitment that says, if we don't have our channel stuff ready to launch, there was actually a commitment in place that says we would delay if that didn't happen. I think the other part, another example of a company we worked with, around this are a good example with NetApp. So they actually were using this as an opportunity to go back and educate a lot of the product teams. So it was basically, you know, as a way to go back and talk to, let me let you understand from an AR perspective, a PR perspective, corporate marketing, product marketing, what are the kind of things that we needed to do? And part of this was to replace, you know, kind of tribal knowledge, right? So this was, okay, this everybody knows this, therefore that's just how it happens. And basically going back and saying, look, let's not make this tribal knowledge, let's make this more of a methodology of how we go to market and approach this. And the, one of the things I think they did a great job of was really kind of connecting the dots and really trying to establish that connection between what was the concept of the buyer's journey versus the partner journey. So both of those teams have done a pretty good job of that. Next question I want to talk about really quick is sort of this whole engagement of how you can work and get better engagement with the marketing teams and ways to improve that interaction. So there's three ways that we can kind of talk about. I think the first one is helping them truly understand the difference between what a customer value proposition is a versus a partner value proposition. So really helping them understand the kind of things that are needed, what, you know, kind of information is relative. Obviously, you know, when we look at what's going on with the partners, and we showed you this a little bit, oftentimes one of the main reasons that partners say no to vendors is not because they didn't know about it or the product wasn't good, but they aren't really sure exactly what the value proposition or the business proposition is associated with the product or with the product line or the solution. So being able to come forward and say, okay, as they built the product, as they developed the product, and they know how customers need it, they typically will have general information as to or the product is, of what is the overall value that that brings to a partner. So being able to capture that and bring that forward, even though it might be complete, it might be incomplete, it's a way to actually get started to say, okay, look, think through and provide to us what it means to a partner in terms of a business perspective and not just the product side. So, you know, we spend a lot of time in this in class, right, and you got the fun opportunity of trying to convince a partner of doing this, and you saw firsthand how that was and what were the differences and what was needed. So going back and helping them truly understand that, because a lot of times we get the head nod. Do you understand the difference in terms of what the value proposition is for the customer versus the partner? And being able to kind of lay this out to them and say, let me explain to you what we're actually looking for, and let me make sure that we're very, very clear. So laying that out, explain to them, look, the partner, having them truly understand that the partner is not making just a product decision, but they're basically making a business decision as to what they're going to go to market with, what, who they're going to focus, who they're going to work with, who's going to be strategic to them, et cetera. All of those kinds of things are required in terms of going out to the with the partner value proposition. And then obviously it's connected to the customer part because obviously, you know, making sure that there's customer demand, there's customer understanding, understand what the customer solutions are, things like that. So that's the first thing, just making sure you have the opportunity to go back and explain to them and make sure that they understand that. The next thing was to, in order to prove this, is really helping the organizations truly understand what the capabilities are on how partners go to market. We talked a little bit about this in the session in terms of what kind of marketing they require, what they're looking for. Obviously, we've got some recent research that talks about some of the details, but just kind of some of the top line things. Number one is, you know, partners are literally trying to update their skills. You know, we hear this time and time again, most of the partners, and this isn't necessarily true for the really big partners because obviously some of those guys are really good marketers. But in general, most of the partners are trying to up-level their skills. So instead of just being kind of event-based and reference-based, they're trying to really kind of figure out how can they engage in digital marketing, social marketing, and then obviously the marketing technology is becoming even more important. And a number of them still aren't using those kinds of technologies, but they really are starting to look at folks that have those capabilities so that they can take advantage of it more. We also build, oftentimes, when we get campaigns and programs from the corporate side, we don't recognize the execution requirements that are needed in order for a partner to go make those happen. The reality is most of the folks, as you know, are literally doing multiple jobs, and a lot of times in some of the smaller partners, you know, their focus is not necessarily marketing. Their focus is something else, and marketing is just another hat they wear. So connecting the dots, making sure that the corporate folks or whoever's building the end user campaigns that are expected to work with the channels, making sure they have a clear understanding not just of what the partner type is, but what the capabilities are of those partners. And like I said, the most important things that, you know, they came back and said, these are the things that we're focused on. Obviously, the search engine kind of things obviously are important. So, you know, helping them understand that, making sure that there's things, and, you know, that can be some of the most valuable marketing activities that are provided to them, whether it be guidance, whether it be understanding, whether it be implementation, whether it be, white glove kind of treatment, just helping them with all those kind of things. Obviously, you know, they still are doing a lot of face-to-face. So the whole concept of events and telemarketing, obviously that's still important because they still are oftentimes quite focused on making sure that they're able to deliver or get in front of the people, and basically it can often be more of a sales motion. The other thing that we see a lot of, especially for any of these folks that are doing global work, what we typically will see on the global side is that when programs are built, a lot of times, you know, there's not a good understanding of a segmentation as to who can actually execute this. So we ran this a lot. Building programs that work in the East Coast of the U.S. are not necessarily programs that are going to work in Italy, right? So the resources are different, capabilities are different, so have an understanding of how those things need to get modified, especially if it's trying to be a more systematic approach at the global level. So those are some of the things. We do have some information, so if you guys need some of this, if you need to talk to the product organizations and educate them on what some of the partners' capabilities are and what's driving them, we can definitely help you provide some of that information. And the last thing that we've seen that worked really well, in addition to the channel-ready checklist, is think about developing what we call a bill of materials, right? So a joint bill of materials that support all the channel activities that are required. This can be, as simple or as complex as you want it to be. Here's an example, and so don't freak out about this because this is a fairly sophisticated company. The thing that I want to focus you on is a couple of things. Number one is basically understanding that there's a lot of things that have to be delivered. So a lot of times you have to prioritize this. If you look at it, some of these things you can basically define as being required. Some of them are optional, and some of them are like, look, we're going to create it, but we don't know enough about the specific instance, so some of that has to be customized on their own. The other thing that I think is critically important that oftentimes we see missed from many of the product groups is that making sure they have a really solid understanding of who the audience is, which is the audience is down the left side of this, is who is the audience for this and what do they actually need and what's required for them. Because, for instance, what's required from an MSP might be very different than what's required from a global SI, right? So understanding which is needed by each of these groups, obviously a lot of overlap. And obviously if you were to take this and try and go deliver all this, it'd take 20 people 6 months. So the point is not to basically just copy this. The point is for you to basically use this as a guidepost to say, if I could create this and basically get alignment from each of the organizations that are needed, that can give you the roadmap required to help you drive and engage with the partner group or the marketing groups to drive what you need to be successful within the channel group. Okay? And by the way, this is available. So we actually have this in a spreadsheet format that will, I know Lisa will update and put in your class portal. So it'll be available for you to download. And like I said, don't just take it as it is. Just use this as a concept that you can modify, change, and update for your particular organization. So with that, do a quick summary and then have time for a few questions if needed. So just in summary, so connecting the whole buyer's journey with the partner's journey. Ultimately, our fundamental view is that if you can get real alignment and understanding of what are the steps required at the very beginning of the process, that typically is where we have seen success, and we've basically seen companies be able to change the way they operate from just getting those connected and making sure everybody's on the same page. Channel-ready checklist, it's not end-all be-all, but I'll tell you what, it helped us in terms of execution to simplify what was really needed and understood. Most of the product organizations, obviously, they have a cursory knowledge or a secondary knowledge of channels. They don't live and breathe it like we do. Assuming that they know exactly what's required is actually a mistake. So basically being able to go back to them with a very specific checklist to say, look, when you come to market, like I said, whether it be a new product or an update or whatever you're doing, having a very specific set of things that are required literally will help the product groups be able to understand, therefore prioritize, therefore hopefully be able to meet your needs. And the last part, in our jobs, obviously we're responsible for executing on the channels, putting the programs in place. But a big part of what we are required to do, and not all of you, but we're required to do is basically educate and evangelize what the channel is all about. So using opportunities to go back and do lunch and learns and help them understand, whether it be around content that we have for you, things that you're learning from them, roundtables, stuff like that. If you can really, help go back and make sure that they do really understand what you mean by an MSP, what do you mean by, a VAR, exactly how do they go to market, exactly how does that work, the more that you can do that, the better off you tend to be in terms of having them gain a better understanding. And like that quote I gave from the very beginning, again, the most successful companies that do channel well, it's not just because of the channel organization, it's because the channel organization has created and helped drive the DNA across the rest of the organizations. So with that, let me pause. Anything you want to add to that, Raleen, that I might not have covered?
Nope, got it.
Good. Okay, we do want to open up for questions. So questions, anybody? Okay. Well, again, this will be posted. If you do have questions, you want to talk about this, obviously get to Lisa or John or myself or Raleen. We'll be happy to follow up. And if there's any additional information that you want to talk about, happy to provide that to you. Again, hopefully this is helpful.
I have a quick question. I'm just wondering if you could show the customer and channel journey again.
Sure.
Isn't that fine?
Who is this speaking?
It's Katie from Dropbox.
Hi, Katie. How are you?
Hi. Good. How are you?
Great.
Good. So I think that as we are a B2C and also a B2B company, it's interesting to see, since we're emerging in the channel, like how to translate our messaging. And so when you look at especially like the onboarding, which is not one thing that I see on here, I think that's where we're really focused is. And I'm wondering if you could just comment a little bit about the onboarding and some best practices that you've seen in terms of, getting them to their first transaction and things that seem to work, especially with MSPs, as we've find it to be, yes, make it successful with their business model, show them the value, but I think it's more than that. So I was wondering if you could comment.
Yes, it is more than that. So that's embedded in here. So we tried to generalize this in just terminology. The onboarding is all in here, right? So it's recruiting and enabling those folks, getting them up to speed, whether it be as a new partner or whether it be on a new product or a new program. Okay. So that's where we include that. So here's my comment on that. In terms of getting them up to speed, the very first thing is a compelling value proposition for the partners. And that's what we show. A lot of times, you go and you talk to them and say, oh, it's a cool product. That's really neat. It's very interesting. But I can't make any money at it, so why would I do this, right? It's just kind of an ancillary thing. So the first part is, it's not just is this a good product, but it's can I make money in any way, shape, or form, reselling it, enabling it, including it in my programs, et cetera. How can I do that, and can you show them that? That's number one. The second part of this is typically when you go, and we saw this in the class, right, when we were talking to partners, the first thing that they're going to typically do is when you tell them about a proposition, first thing they're going to do is, which of my customers can I actually include or sell that to, right? So that's do I have customers? Forget new customers a second, right, because the first part is they're typically going to look at this through the lens of their existing customers initially and says, is there anybody that I know wants or needs this? So if you can get through those hurdles, and obviously there's the technical piece, which you got to assume that you're handling that as well. The next part of this is, okay, can you help them get to revenue in 90 days? We have seen over and over again, if you can't provide a way through enablement programs to get them to revenue in 90 days, and obviously I'm not talking, if they're seriously complex, literally, 9-month sales cycles, that's different. But typically, if you can't show them how they can get to revenue in 90 days, that will typically be the biggest problem. So showing them, enabling them, getting them to up to speed quickly in 90 days, if you can do that and they can actually start to see it, because ultimately if they don't see revenue, they're going to stop very quickly because they simply don't have the resources to continue to invest in something where they don't see money coming in. Does that help you?
It does, and I just I think just showing the value of how to integrate into their ecosphere and then also or ecosystem, and then I think the value messaging is super important. And I also am wondering about lead pass. Like a lot of people in sales has asked, like, well, do we give new partners, you know, 3 or 4 leads and get them started? And, you know, I don't know. I go back and forth on that. So I'd wonder what your thought is on, like.
I'll give you a thought on that. I'll let Raleen as well. So I've been in companies where, you know, the concept of, you know, I'll give you 2, you give me 1. I've seen that over and over and over again from sales people. So, look, let's find 2 accounts that we can bring you into, and then let's find 1 that you can bring us into, and then let's go from there. The point being is that, you know, we need to really get this partnership going, and if you can't get to revenue quickly, then the interest dies immediately. So there's definitely some value in that if that's how, you know, if you're capable of doing it, that's great. You know, if you have issues or conflicts or whatever, I mean, obviously you got to work through that. But if you can do something like that, especially in a high-touch model, that tends to work pretty well. Raleen, anything you want to add to that?
Totally agree with Mark's point about high-touch. These tend to be your best and brightest where you might look and say, let's do our first 2 to 3 deals together. And if I can get you past 3 deals, it's the whole, instead of give you fish, I'm going to teach you to fish. Right. And so if we can co-sell our first 2 to 3 deals together, and if you take a look at some companies, I mean, take a look at Intel, take a look at Cisco, I mean, where there's direct sales forces and other support in the field to help them go. If a customer brings forward an opportunity, there's no threat that the direct sales force will take it direct, but the direct sales force does engage to help them sell it. It's that kind of selling sometimes that really gets people over the hump. But again, as Mark said, it's your high-touch partners. It's your managed accounts. It's really hard to scale that to 10,000, 12,000.
The other thing you see, too, with that is you got to one thing you got to be careful. This should be used as a carrot, right? So what you don't want to do is get to the concept that you're just giving them fish all the time, right? So we looked at the onboarding programs. You know, it's okay, there are certain things that you have to do in order for us to give you fish. So that can drive education. It can drive technical training. It can drive whatever else you want it to do. So we're not going to give you leads until you've done that. And if you're going to help them do that, then you drive it to that. So then you're getting them where you want to, and you're using this as a carrot, as opposed to this becoming your program where we're just going to give you leads and and that's how it's going to work. Does that make sense?
Yeah. Nope. That totally makes sense. And I think in terms of a smaller, when you're talking about channel groups within a larger corporate marketing, it's interesting kind of where we're at. And then to just see that it's, you know, while we don't have, you know, partners don't get really called until they get to their third transaction by partner account managers, things like that. So there's a different motion that marketing can kind of, you know, own and help out. But that was super helpful to put it in context. Thank you.
You're welcome.
Mm-hmm.
Anybody else have questions? Don't be shy. Okay. Well, if there's no other questions, we sincerely appreciate continued investment. We know you're busy. We know you have a lot going on, so taking the time to engage with us, we appreciate it. Again, if you have questions, if you want to do them offline, feel free to get to John or Lisa, and Raleen and myself or others will be happy to follow up and engage. So hope you guys have a great rest of your week. Thanks a lot, and we'll be talking to you soon. Bye, everybody.
Thanks, Mark.
Bye.
Thanks, Raleen.
Thank you.